Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to another episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir, psychic medium Sherry, Joe Pinohu, and Joel Walling. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, but also step outside the box a bit and discuss current events. Great conversation among friends.
Hey everyone, welcome to Paranormal Horizons. I'm Joel Walling, filling in for Jason. Got a little confused on that one, and if you're one of the normally tuned into the Night Stalker, that you haven't found the wrong show. This is still Paranormal Horizons. Jason's a little under weather, so I've stepped in to fill for him for tonight, and we hope him a speedy recovery and everything gets better with him soon. Of course, I'm joined tonight with the co-host, Sherry Payne. Hey, you on here?
Yes. Hi, Joe. How are you?
All right. And been a bit of a busy weekend, but it's always good to stay busy.
Yeah, it's better than being bored half to death. No, I'm just teasing.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh my gosh! Wow. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, we're joined by a new person, and I've got a feeling he's probably going to be a regular on Paranormal Horizons, but I want to introduce a new person. He's been a paranormal investigator for umpteen years, and he's a big part of TAPS and Vancouver Paranormal Society. So I'm just going to get right on it and introduce Pete Wren. Hi, Pete. How are you?
Hi, guys. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very, very good.
Good.
Yeah, giving a little background on Pete. I mean, I'm not going to take up the whole time, but Pete was a part of TAPS. May go into that a little bit. You're still acting president of the Vancouver Paranormal Society.
Do you want me to say my full resume? And
yeah, I think maybe okay. I was going to try to give it a little bit of a version, but then again, that whole English language thing just isn't working in my head right now.
It's a broken translation, and I'm sure after this call, all you can hear is my accent in your head anyway. That's what happens most of the time. So I'm soon to be removed. I'm president of the Vancouver Paranormal Society, which is the oldest paranormal research team in Canada. I'm newly found co-partner with Jason Hewitt and a girl called Louise Sedgill. We've just founded the Canadian Paranormal Foundation, which is going to be a non-profit fundraising society in relation to paranormal studies and fundraising for non-profit society heritage sites up and down BC. I'm director of the TAPS family. I used to be an international liaison and recruitment director of recruitment as well. I'm also a documenting investigator for an ordained exorcist in Washington State, and I deal with remote cases up and down BC. I think that's it at the moment. I've got a couple of other things going on at the moment. Oh, I've just recently authored a book as well. It's called I Want to Believe, One Man's Journey into the Paranormal with Jason Hewitt. He's my co-author on that as well, and that's tales of my paranormal ventures throughout the world, because I've obviously, as you can tell by my accent, I come from the UK, so I spent a few years over there investigating. I lived in Australia for a few years and New Zealand as well, so there's some stories in there as well about that. I'm also a producer on a YouTube show called We Want to Believe, which started at the beginning of 2020, but it's been kind of put on hold because of COVID. And that's basically it.
Everything in the world has been put on hold because of COVID. I mean, it's
just... Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, the backlog of cases now from both what I'm getting from the Canadian Paranormal Foundation and from some of the cases that I had on the back burner from the Vancouver Paranormal Society is kind of building up. And by the time we're going to go back, I anticipate I'm going to be slammed out for probably the next three years with projects. So it's going to be busy times for sure.
Definitely. Now, I know that, you know, Canada has taken a little different approach than the U.S. because the U.S. is more based on a state-by-state regulations with COVID. But, I mean, has everything up there pretty much shut down like it has here?
Pretty much. I mean, it does vary province to province. I think it's more stricter now over the East Coast than what it is like in on the West Coast. But there's still, you know, we're not allowed to socialise in like large groups and stuff like that, and we have to stick within the government define as our bubble, which is you know, family and friends that you know acquaintances you work with and stuff like that, and then that's what they're kind of amalgamating to as a bubble.
Yeah,
so
you know, here with the holidays when they happened, even like family gatherings were limited to no more than 8 people.
Yeah, it's different here. It's depending what's in your bubble. So like if you had a family of about if you lived, it depends on how many people you live with. Like I currently live with my in-laws at the moment. So my family is my bubble at the moment is 6 with extended family members, which goes to about 13, 14 of them. And that's kind of my bubble, how the government defines it. But other than that, it's family that are, you know, in close proximity or under the same roof kind of thing.
Yeah, it definitely shuts down the ability of doing anything like investigations or like you talked about your documentary series on YouTube, which I was attempting to find. I know it's under a different production company name. The actual videos are, I mean, I do see your website says wanttobelieve.net. So that would be one, I would guess, one way of actually being able to search down and be able to look at those.
It's actually under Joe Blow Productions, which is a production company out of Montreal in Canada. And they have a number of, they have a number of kind of paranormal horror type theme shows that they produce on YouTube, and that's their kind of market at the moment. But we are later this year venturing into their new paranormal channel, so we're going to be doing things on there. We're going to do different variations of shows and stuff like that on there as well, like interviews, case studies on investigations, that kind of thing.
That definitely does sound interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely busy times for sure, even though there's no chance of getting out anytime soon.
Well, you know, actually, that was something Michael and I had kind of started looking at, too. We found that, you know, there's so much information online right now. I can't remember if we talked about this off the air when you were on the Night Stalker, that, you know, Michael and I kind of sat down and did a forensic type research look to the Sally House, one of the most well-known haunted locations in the United States. And, you know, we were finding like a lot of the stuff that they were pointing out as like, oh, well, one of the big ones was the grave of who they said was Sally. And, you know, they're saying Sally is this little girl. It actually turns out the person in that grave is named Sally, but she was a 30-some-year-old African-American woman.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it's like, so when they would point this grave out as, but there's, like I said, there's just so much information that you can actually dig into a lot of the public records and things like that are available online now.
Yeah,
and especially now as things are turning.
The problem is in I don't know how you research kind of areas in America, but generally in the UK and in Canada as well, they have obviously adopted the same regime as what we have in the UK. Typically, when we're researching areas and stuff like that, like the most accurate information that we can find is within the city hall or local libraries in that area. Generally the things that we find on the internet are kind of broken stories, if that makes sense. And a lot of the times with things in Canada, the truth are so far stretched online in comparison to what actually is a reality. So it's, you know, when you get, you know, as you define someone as a researcher as such, are they actually researching or are they actually just going on to Google? That's the thing as well, right? Is that defined difference?
It's kind of a researcher beware kind of warning. Like well, the information I found on the Sally House, that was actually searching from a genealogy website.
Yep.
The people that go in
that's a different angle altogether. See, that's
it's actually called it's really creatively named. It's called Find a Grave. And they do, they go into each graveyard and they copy the record books. You know, there's a record in every graveyard or cemetery.
Yeah.
Of who's buried in what plot. You know, and they actually scan in those records and then they catalog. So if you look up, you know, St. Michael Cemetery in, you know, blah, blah, Texas, they will actually have, okay, plot one, row one east is this person, plot two, row one east is this person. And they actually have like the names and the breakdowns from the record office. You've got to be, like you said, you've got to be very careful what you pull up online, because most of the time, anything you get on the internet, you got to take everything with a grain of salt and quite honestly, often a slice of lime and a shot of tequila, because it's just all, you know, anyone can put anything online.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, as I kind of slaughtered in your introduction, you know, you have
Joe, I forgive you, Mike.
it's been a long way. You know, I'm one of those people. Where I work, it's like, hey, you can get all the overtime you want, and I'm like, you're lucky. I'm not working 20 hours a day. You know, so I'm like, I'm going on my eighth day straight working. Like when I sent you the number, I totally forgot about it because it's like, you know, I'm still in that mode, and my brain's kind of going, okay, I don't function that well anymore anyway, so you might want to slow down a little bit.
Yep.
But what, you know, like we were saying, you have investigated kind of, you know, you've been in multiple countries, different investigations from historical sites to private. What do you think? I mean, I know you've even done some things here in the U.S. What do you see kind of like in the paranormal, which is the country like the most difficult getting, I guess you'd say, like records or being able to do the actual boot on the ground research that you have to do with these states?
It's probably, in the respect of research, was probably more in Canada than anywhere else. Like UK, when I started in the UK, I started 27 years ago, and there was a lot more resources then than what there is now, because there wasn't 101 groups around, if that makes sense. And there was, like, you know, there was resources of places that you can actually find research and stuff like that. And everywhere was fairly open door, even more so than the libraries and the local city halls and stuff like that, to obtain records. In Canada, the problem is, in BC, it's, when I took over Vancouver Paranormal Society 11 years ago, it's the problem is that there's lots of groups out there, and they've just slaughtered the resources here. So, you know, you can't go knocking on doors and asking questions over here, because it's not a taboo subject as such. It's just that everyone's so fed up with groups trying to do, you know, trying to go out and investigate for what, you know, whether it's the right reason or the wrong reason, for whatever reason. It's just been, the whole subject's been burnt to death in BC. But that itself creates a lot of restrictions here in regard to research. When you go to public places like libraries or like the City Hall and stuff like that, it's very much, there's very much a disconnect from the mid, early part of the 19th century. For example, in Vancouver, there was a fire in Vancouver in, I think it was in 1910, and there's certain parts of Vancouver where there's no records whatsoever what was there before, because there was a fire in that area, but it seemed to have destroyed the records for that area as well. It's just it's really ridiculous. It's like Canada made an attempt to, you know, keep records and stuff like that, but not to that degree. But I'm not, you know, obviously I'm not talking for the rest of Canada. I'm just talking specifically about BC. But it's definitely harder here for sure. Even more so now than what it was before.
You know, it's interesting you mention that, because I have personally ran into that too, where, you know, a hall of records will catch fire or there was a flood. That's another one that happens a lot of things. There ends up being some kind of flood damage. And then you will have like decades of the history of a town or even just an area of a town that are completely gone. Like nothing existed there until, you know, like you said, like 1913 or something like that. The whole time.
There's an example. I've got an example for this. And obviously I'm not going to even go into specifics or anything like that, but about 9 years ago, I was actually asked to go and investigate by a city, one of the cities in the Lower Mainland in BC, to go and investigate an old, what used to be, and it's the old poltergeist myth about old houses built on a burial ground, a native burial ground and stuff like that. They must be haunted and stuff like that. But this particular piece of land supposedly was a burial ground, and then they took the burial ground and they then turned them into army barracks for about 40-50 years, like pre-war up until like the early 1970s, I believe. And then they left the land vacant, and then they started building houses on it, like co-op houses, which is defined as affordable housing for people in low-income families. Anyway, they contacted me to say that the residents in two of the streets all had similar complaints about so-called paranormal activity, and we were sent in to document a few of the houses just to see whether there was actually anything going on or whether it's just actually people talking to each other. And a couple of stories short, I wanted to delve into like the history of the land first, and even me talking face to face to the city, there was that cutoff point where they couldn't tell me what that land was beyond when they built an army barracks on it. Like they had no physical records in the city hall whatsoever about what it was, and that was in I think they started building on that in the 1930s. So there's that huge disconnect of about 50-60 years. What was there before, you know? And there was nothing. There was no records there whatsoever. So that's just, you know, just an example as such.
Yeah, and actually one of the cases that I tried to help you guys with in VPS was one you were doing in Chilliwack. And we were running into a lot of the same information from that because of the, you know, same kind of thing where to a certain extent that nothing existed beyond, or there was a major flood and like information was just rampant after the flood, but before the flood, you were getting, it was almost like, I don't want to say hearsay, but it was kind of like that. It was like they were going to people and trying to fill in the blanks going, well, what was there before that? And, well, where were you, you know, there was a native tribe that was near there. And they were like, you know, well, where is, you know, well, they moved after the flood, and they moved their village from one point to another. And it was like, well, then what did you use this part for? And one person, oh, that was just docks. And another one was, oh, it was just this. And, you know, you had like five different stories for the same patch of land.
Yeah.
And yeah,
yeah, that's typical. And that particular city I was talking about wasn't too far from Chilliwack, and it's in the same jurisdiction as Fraser Valley, which is just it's a part of the Lower Mainland in BC, and each town must have the same kind of mentality in regard to that.
Yeah, it does run into stuff like that. I know doing research up in Canada. Records are really difficult to come across. And, even here, it's even worse for like me trying to find stuff here, because a lot of the public records sites that are up, not dealing with the ones like, you know, Jim Bob and Billy Bob went into the, and they say this is what was there, the actual like city of or district of site.
Yeah.
They block USIS, they block the ISP address from the U.S. You can't access
it. It's funny because, like, I haven't really investigated a lot down in the States. So obviously, like, as you know, I went down to Tombstone, which is great, in Arizona, and I investigated a couple of places down there. But I've been called down to a few residential cases in there, down there, and over the years, just down across the border in Washington. And I've been very fortunate because in Washington State, I know a couple of the historians around that area. So they've been like my key to the research of that area more than anything else. And it just, I don't know, for me, it's like night and day, like Canada and America. Like, for getting research in America, it's so much more easier. It almost fell into my hands as soon as I, you know, got my foot across the border kind of thing. But obviously, you know, you've been there a lot longer, and you've happened to do the research a lot longer as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's like, if you can find a place that has kept good records, barring any type of natural disaster or, you know, anything like that, you can get, like, land records back, in some cases, from the, you know, 17, 1800s.
Yeah.
No problem. And have like owner traces and like one of the funniest ones. This was actually one I did in Wilmington. Was helping research with a friend of mine that passed away. There was something that people would hear glasses clinking in this one area, and they kept, it's like, it sounds like you're in a restaurant or a bar or something. You can hear glass clinking around.
Yeah.
Well, there's never been anything like that. Never been anything like that. We searched back. The building was really old. It had been built in Wilmington in, like, I believe it was the 1880s or 1870s. We found out that when it was originally opened, it was a bar.
Oh, wow.
You know, they have the bar name. They had everything, the original business license and agreement and all that, you know. So it is, I got to say, out of the two places that I have done research myself, it is a lot easier to find a lot more detailed information in the U.S. than it is in Canada, especially British Columbia. British Columbia records are a mess.
Yeah, you're not wrong there, mate. You're not wrong.
I mean, that's just it. So, hey, Sherry, are you still with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm listening.
Okay, sorry, can you keep up my accent, Sherry?
Oh yeah, I don't have anything to say.
Yeah.
I'm just paying attention because this is all new to me. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. I normally get deer in headlights when I stop talking, but thankfully Joel's had experience of me chatting, so he's kind of adverse to it.
No.
Yeah.
I'll intervene. Don't worry about it. I'm just listening right
okay.
now.
Yeah, it's like I told you last time we talked. That was the one downside of reading your book. I mean, I love it, and I've got it. I'm in like the last little few pages of it now. But now my inner monologue has got a British accent now.
You're going around calling everyone mate and cheers.
Yeah, that was the worst part of the book, I have to say.
What is your book about?
Basically, it's kind of like my chronicles. When I it's a little bit my life story and my experiences when I was a child and various other experiences I had when I lost family members and stuff like that. It also speaks of investigations in the UK, famous historical locations in the UK, Australia, and Canada as well. It just kind of touches on that. And what's interesting about it as well, it kind of does the full circle. It's not just me visiting haunted houses with credible witnesses, but it also talks about, logical solutions to investigations as well, where we actually found out, you know, the reasons why things weren't, you know, paranormal to a witness or, to a client. So it kind of does that full circle more than anything else.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah, and, you know, it is important we do stress that it's not always, so many times now, and this is something that we didn't really touch on last time we talked, but I kind of want to get into it. But, you know, it's so much now that you see the stuff on YouTube, and every place they go is haunted, and 90% of the places they go, they're demonic.
Yeah, that's a generation of TV now, unfortunately, and it's just driving everyone that are coming into this field into the wrong direction, because they're watching those shows and they're perceiving that everything on there is to how we should be investigating, and we've lost that kind of sense of moral ship in the field now, because all everyone seems to do, apart from a small minority, of course, I'm not going to talk about everyone out there, but everyone just seems to be that kind of thrill seeker out there that just wants to be rich and famous. They want to be the Zap Baggins. They want to be the Taps. They want that TV show more than anything else. And unfortunately, they would do anything to make their show as glitterized Hollywood-like as they can. And that's one of the things about, you know, I'm not plugging my show We Want to Believe or anything like that, but the show that I'm doing at the moment with Jason and our crew, it's more of the documentary side. It's us documenting in our events when we're going, you know, when we're studying different realms of the paranormal. Like, you know, for example, next episode that's coming up, we're going Bigfoot hunting. And, you know, we went to the one before that was us investigating a barn where there was no evidence whatsoever, but it kind of shows us that full circle about us, you know, the story to it and stuff like that, and us going in there and, studying different elements of it and stuff like that. And it makes a better show that I feel anyway, because it's realistic rather than that Hollywood glitter that you see on most TV shows now.
Absolutely, because, you know, when I see this, you know, even though I'm, you know, so-called a psychic medium, and you know, my basis, like I said earlier before we went live on air, is that I'm a medical medium. I'm trained as a practitioner in Chinese medicine. But when you see, like, people like, I don't know if you ever heard of her, Teresa Caputo, she's a very well-known medium. She's not psychic, but she's a medium. And as a makeup artist for the film and video industry for 14 years prior, so I did a specialty in models, professional models. I worked with photographers, professional photographers for print and things like that. People think, oh, my gosh, it's so glamorous, and everybody's right on and everything. And, you know, when you think about it, it is they only show you the best, what they want you to see. It's not exactly, you know, how the realization is. She's not 100% accurate. She has off days. I saw her in person when she came out to Portland. We paid $75 a ticket to be on the balcony, and I'm not downing her. She is a good medium, but she was off. for 2 hours.
Yeah.
He was fishing, literally fishing for getting the answers. Oh, did somebody have some jewelry? You have, somebody's got to have some necklace of their loved one. Well, who doesn't? When you're looking at, you know, 50 people, one of them's got to, you know, kind of thing. It's weird.
Yeah. That's the thing, though, Sherry. It's like, unfortunately, what, you know, your line of expert, not expertise, but your gift gets dragged through the coals quite often, because there are so many fraudulent medium or psychics out there that are, you know, out for the wrong reasons. And I've come in contact with them over the years, and that's why I use them, but I use them at a distance, if that makes sense, because of the fact I'll give you an example. When I took over Vancouver Paranormal Society, there was three mediums within the team, and I thought I'd carry that trend on. But it got to a stage where we were getting so distracted with these mediums, because they were taking, you know, they weren't stealing the show as such, but they were going into places and they were saying, oh, there's a man standing over there, and they were arguing over each other about what they were feeling and stuff like that. And it became a big distraction and that kind of thing. But on the flip side of that as well, I've caught a few mediums going. I caught one medium once going through some letters, trying to find names and stuff like that in the client's house. So I've caught them all doing it, and that's why I've kind of brushed them off in the past. And don't get me wrong, I believe wholeheartedly that there are some, you know, some gifted mediums out there and that have that ability. But unfortunately, majority of them get painted by the same brush, and it's just it just creates that, you know, stigma for all the other, you know, legitimate psychic mediums the psychic mediums that are actually, that do have a gift.
And I would say, honestly,
yep.
And I've been in this arena for a long, long time, and I'm born with it, but I would say, honestly, even when I've gone to these metaphysical fairs, the big ones, the small ones, I would say 95% of them, whether you're psychic, medium, tarot, whatever, they're all a bunch of frauds. 95 to 98.
Yeah, they do. And you know what? It's a shame, because the one that I know, I have two like mediums in my life, psychic mediums in my life, that I know one wholeheartedly that does have that gift, but she's not always accurate, and she's not always, you know, on the ball about things and stuff like that. And it's the same with the other one as well. And, you know, it's just, they've got to understand that it's not a constant, you know, you can't keep spitting out golden coins. That's the thing. You're going to get a couple of rotten eggs every now and again. And
exactly.
But the thing is with...
Yeah. Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the realization of it. But everyone, because what's seen on TV about these mediumship shows where, you know, like you get John Edwards, he just walks into a room and he starts calling people out straight away. It doesn't happen like that. You don't just naturally walk into a room and say, oh, look, I can see your Uncle Fred sitting in the corner and he's, you know, he's waving at you and stuff like that. It doesn't happen like that in real life. And, you know, not everyone has a good day, that kind of thing. And that's why, you know, you get that, you know, all the mediums all brush the same kind of way.
What do you think, Joel?
Yeah.
What's your feeling on that?
Well, you know, I think it goes into, I'm often reminded of a saying, the monkey climbs the tree the highest, shows its ass the most. And that's paranormal, psychic medium, anything you want to go into, big cryptozoology, Bigfoot, that kind of thing, ufology, any of it, the people that get the most attention. And there's one person in particular that I particularly have a disdain for, that's on TV, and I've heard so much crap about him that I've sworn it's my life duty now just to walk up to him and kick him as hard as I can squarely in the balls until they pop up and knock his eyeballs out and replace them. The guy that has adventures on TV and did a Demon House. Which that I don't even want to get into that. It gets my blood pressure.
Oh,
going.
You're talking about Ghost Adventures.
Yeah, but this guy, you know, he has done so much damage, just with his ego, and he was the one that started the trend of everything's a demon, because they have the demon of the week.
You know, they do.
Every time they do a spirit box section, oh, it's a demon and it wants to kill Zach. You know, okay, really? If there is that much that's wanting to kill Zach, Zach'd be dead by now. You know, it's like, you know, and a person all three of us know, try to copy his way off of Zach, and so many of the people, the ones you see in like YouTube and everything, have done that.
Yeah.
So they have come up with everything's a demon now, everything's evil. And like, you know, we were saying, it's a wide brush, it gets painted, that if this guy is the face of paranormal investigation, then all paranormal investigators got to be like him. The same with like
comedians.
You got Don
Edwards
coming out.
You're right, John. It doesn't really annoy me so much, because it's the way it is now. It's when you get on social media and people post, you know, who would you like to investigate? Who would be your favorite five people to investigate with? And then you've got, like, you know, you get the same candidates every time. It's like, oh, Jason Halls, you know, Steve from, you know, Stephen Tango, Bilbo Baggins, I mean, Zap Baggins. You know, you get the same old candidates each time. It's just like, hang on a minute, these guys are TV celebrities. And, it's just take it back here as well. And I understand, you know, like a lot of these guys have, you know, have influences in the paranormal field and stuff like that. But if I was to talk to myself with anyone, and no disrespect for them or anything like that, because they've, you know, they've earned their craft and that kind of thing, I'd rather investigate with actual researchers that the pioneers and stuff like that of the craft more than anything else.
Well, see, that was one of the things that got me, that really, I know a guy that designs different investigation equipment, and he designed a germanium diode. And he actually got in touch with the producers there and was like, I'd be glad to send these to your team. I would love for them to test it and, you know, let me know their experience. And they're like, sure, it's $500 an item per episode.
Jesus.
They actually were charging him $500 per item per episode. If you wanted in two episodes and you send three things, that's, you know, $3,000 that you have to pay Ghost Adventures just for them to use your device on air.
Boy, that's ridiculous.
You,
wow.
You know, there's no interest in research there. They're not trying to further anything. They're just making ratings. I mean, that's all it is to them. And if you've ever seen that new, it's old now, but that Demon House documentary thing that they shot, where he gets on and actually proclaims himself the foremost authority in demonology and paranormal investigation.
Have you seen it? Was it good or not? What was your feeling on that?
No, it's worthless. It's trash. It's completely worthless.
I haven't seen it,
though. What's that?
I haven't seen it. I don't watch TV anyway, I'll be honest with you. The only time I watch TV is when I'm watching my YouTube documentary. Good plug. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well,
I stay away from TV. My life consists of Netflix and Amazon Prime, that kind of thing. I stay away from TV. I stay away from paranormal shows because, you know, there's too many of them and they're all exactly the same. And I just keep picking holes in it, each one of them. You know, fair enough.
Yeah.
There was Ghost Hunters when it came out, and you know what? For North America, Jason Halls and Grant Wilson put that element of show on the map. They were the pioneers for TV in North America, you know, which is great. But then after, you know, about 800 TV shows later, you know, different variations of that same concept, the whole thing gets boring. And, you know, when they walk into destinations and places and stuff like that, and you're questioning everything that they produce, and it's just not worth it. And I'm very skeptical as a person, as an investigator, and I'm even more skeptical when it comes to these TV shows and stuff like that, because I basically call bullshit on everything, and because it's TV, and that I can't get convinced any otherwise about it.
Right. Yeah, I ended up watching the Demon House documentary. It's on Prime. I don't have, like, I have Air Television in case I want to watch local news or something. But
yep.
That's the extent. I have Prime, I have Hulu, that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I think I ended up watching it one afternoon because my girlfriend was running a little late. We were going to go out, and I'm like, okay, let's see. Okay, I guess I'll bite the bullet and watch this. I was screaming at my TV 26 seconds in. Because
really?
He also put that demonologists have agreed that demons can possess you through your television. That is the warning.
Joel,
26
Hawaiian
seconds
haunting?
Into that.
Joel,
what's that?
The people from Hawaiian haunting, they believe it. They believe in that shit.
You know, I've heard that, and I'm like. But I wonder, the thing that gets me is anytime they say something on, like, or Zach Bagan says something, he doesn't just say, you know, hey, I believe, if he would just be like, hey, I believe this, or I think this, or I have a theory that this could happen, that's one thing. But it's like the old commercials where they were like, 9 out of 10 doctors agree. Well, he gets up there, demonologists all agree with me, and they say that this can happen. And then, of course, he, like I said, then within a minute and a half, he proclaims himself one of the world's most authorities in demonology and paranormal investigation. And I'm like, was there a meeting I didn't hear about? You know, who voted this? Who decided it?
He did.
But now getting back to your stuff, because like I said, once I get off on a rant on that guy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Joel, bring this back in, mate. Come on.
Yeah. Like I said, I have gotten a little bit further. And one of them, I got to say that it was really refreshing with your book, because anyone who does in paranormal investigation or anything like that, they do, you kind of put your best foot forward. And your book really is an open book to your life. You know, like, you freely admit mistakes, and hey, if I was doing that now, this would be completely different. One of them, and I don't know, almost felt like it was maybe a little bit regret, was that prison in Australia. Because you were like, you know, we didn't really handle it the way you would now.
Yeah, well, it was a different time in my life. When I lived in Australia, it was I was drinking a lot and I was partying a lot and stuff like that. And it was more at that time. It was more kind of let's go out, and it was more of a kind of a thrill seeking mission than what it was a paranormal investigation. Like we didn't, you know, I had like a kind of cheap digital voice recorder and a couple of other bits and pieces and stuff like that, but. It was a golden opportunity at that time to investigate a phenomenal place. Like the Fremantle Prison is probably one of the most haunted places in Australia. Like it has so many different stories of you know, different types of criminals that got hung in that in that prison, and it had such a great history. And I it was great to investigate it. Well, it was great to walk around there and ask a few questions and stuff like that. But the regret was that I didn't have the resources that I have now then that I could have used, if that makes sense. And I could have made a more better opportunity at that time to investigate the place. Plus, we were drinking a bit as well, which is not always a good thing to do when you're on an investigation as well. But that was kind of the culture we had in Australia at the time, as you probably know by the stereotypical images you get of Australia. But it was just drinking quite a lot as well.
Yeah, I was about to say I don't think that's changed all that much, at least for what we see in as represented in Australia, like especially in the U.S. It's basically like we've got Crocodile Dundee and Foster's beer. That's
our
mentality in Australia.
It was great, don't get me wrong. I had like a really good 3.5 years out there, but I couldn't, like towards the end, I didn't see it long term out there. That's why I came. I went back to England for about a year, then before I immigrated out to Canada. So,
yeah, you know, and like I said, with your book, you really kind of, like you said, it's kind of a combination of really your story, investigation methods and techniques, and the things that you've learned from, you know, 25 plus years of doing it. A lot of it learned through trial and error, because as you know, anyone really knows, there's no set list of right or wrong. Well, there are a lot of wrongs to do, but as far as like legitimate investigation, there's no like set, okay, this is how you do it. You go A, B, C, D.
There's no textbook in what we do. There's no written code in what we do. It's just basic trial and error kind of thing. And fortunately with me, I have, you know, I've had like quarter of a century to, not to perfect it, but to have a better chance of investigating than what I would have done definitely 25 years ago. But then again, 26 years ago, I didn't have the money then either. I mean, like when I first started out, I had a second-hand tape recorder with a mic, busted up microphone, and I was using pipe cleaners and bells and stuff like that. So it was a different time then, and the investigations were different then as well. Like we were using, some of the investigators on the team were, well, the investigators on the team back then were old enough to be my grandfather, even back then. So they're probably like well and truly dead now. But they were like the team I first joined up with were very spiritual, and they used crystals, and they used Ouija boards as well, spirit boards and stuff like that. And it just, it was a different genre back then than what it is now, in comparison to when I first started investigating, for sure.
Yeah, and it, you know, as we were both talking, you know, you do, like, it was funny because when I first started, of course, everything we did had tape in it. You had a camera,
yeah.
You bought a tape in it, and basically you could kind of go broke buying the crap. You had to buy batteries and tape and all that for each investigation. And I actually was one of the few that had a digital camera on the, I think it was like two of us had a digital camera on the team. And I had went out and bought a really, really, really cheap one that was a kid's camera, but it did the trick, and it looked like the Batman symbol from the utility belt.
Yeah.
So here I am walking around in an investigation with a Batman utility belt digital camera.
I used to buy the old disposable cameras. Every investigation used to cost me £7. No, £5.50. And that's probably about $10 now. But that used to be the cost of me buying a camera and getting the film developed as well at the same time. And it was like 24 pictures of the same shit, and there was nothing ever on there of interest. It was just like complete horrible pictures as well, because you didn't have the chance of looking at it through a digital camera. So it'd be like 24 pictures of someone's head.
Yeah, you'd be like, okay, there's a picture of the wall kind of at a sideways angle.
And I bet because we used to get our pictures developed in a local pharmacy, and the guy in the pharmacy, when he was developing my pictures, was like, what the hell, he must be thinking, what the hell is this guy on? He's like, had 24
right.
pictures of the back of this guy's head developed.
You know, yeah, I imagine some of the pictures that we've sent through the places to, they've been like, what were these people on? You know,
definitely.
We didn't have the gift of being able to have a you know, the little image finder in the back, and of course it's not like now where you slap a SD card in it and you've got, you know, 1,000 pictures if you want to use them.
It was a different process back then, and even to a degree, like the lot of the methodology and the people that I had in my team back then were totally different to what they are now. They, you know, there was a different, it was a slightly different approach, but it was always, that kind of, you know, that approach of respect whenever you went into a new place. There was never any provoking or anything like that. Over in the UK, they're very student about, you know, being very respectful in investigations and stuff like that. And I've adopted a lot of that mentality when I investigate over here as well. You know, what I'm like in EVP sessions and stuff like that. The questions I ask are always very respectful and stuff like that. And I, you know, it's always, you know, and at the end of each session, I say thank you and goodbye and stuff like that as well. And it's just that kind of respect thing. And unfortunately, you know, I'm not going to put everyone in the same basket, but you don't get that too much in North America anymore.
No, you don't, actually. And I've noticed that kind of mentality creeping into the younger generation. I've noticed with Canada sometimes, Canada is about 5 to 10 years behind where the U.S. gets with certain things.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that mentality creeping into some of the, because I'm still part of some of the like Facebook groups and things like that I was in Canada. And I'm seeing that starting to creep in up there as well. Of course, the one idiot that will remain nameless, he was very much like that. And me and him fought over that constantly. Because I was in the old school, you did everything with respect. You know, that was the way I was kind of trained into it. That's the way I was brought into it. And then you get who's completely different now.
Each person that comes into the field are woven in different ways, and it's a lot of it is don't blame the player, blame the game, because it's a lot of what they've perceived is what the field is, because they don't know any of the better. And it's all about us trying to educate people, you know, the people that are non-ignorant as well, about how, you know, just to be respectful, I guess, more than anything else. You know, it's not, like we were saying earlier on, there isn't a textbook in what we do. You know, the questions must only be between this time and, you know, the spaces between each question must only be between 15 to 20 seconds. It doesn't matter. That's immaterial. It's just the respectful thing more than anything else. And it just, you know, it's a feather in your cap more than anything else as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, honestly, there isn't a textbook, but your book does have a lot of very useful and helpful information in it about kind of, like I said, the progression of how you investigate and how you handled investigations from when you started. Basically, by reading that in, the little under 200 pages it is, you kind of get an idea of the total methodology and the way you used it changing from when you started in England, your time in Australia, and moving forward and how it is now.
Yeah, it was. And each time, you know, in England, when I investigated over there, it was a different approach. And then when in Australia, it was kind of more, I didn't take it as seriously as what I did now. Since I arrived in Canada, like 13 years ago, and it does change you, because you get, once I stopped the partying and stuff like that, I decided I wanted to go engage myself more into the paranormal than what I did before. And it's once, you know, you suddenly realise, okay, I want to rekindle that name I had for myself back in the UK, and it's just, you know, you just carry on doing what you're doing before. But I get so annoyed, like, with people like that provoke and stuff like that, and they're not being conscientious about other people. And, you know, there's people living residential homes and stuff like that, and some guy goes in there and he starts shouting and screaming, demanding whatever's there to come out and stuff like that. You know what? People have to live there, and 95% of the time, nothing's going to happen. Nothing ever is going to happen. Actually, probably more than that. Probably about 99.9% of the time, nothing's going to happen once they leave their house. But you know what? If that 0.1% of the time, something did actually happen when they left the house, How can that person live with themselves? You know?
Yeah.
It just, they got no consideration for other people. Not the dead,
yeah.
More than, well, the dead and the living, I guess.
Yeah, it's a very good point that, you know, when we're done with the investigation, we go home. The people who are there, they're already home. You know, so we're leaving them with whatever we may cause. And we're almost out of time here, but before we go, I want to give, if you had anything, because like you pointed out that, you know, then that's something that we share that you and I have always thought alike with, that it's about trying to help the next ones coming in and try to pass on knowledge. Share what we've learned.
Yeah.
To a new investigator, somebody who is just thinking about starting this out, thinking, you know, they've got the bite and they've been reading and they've, you know, watching this stuff. What kind of advice would you give them on the right way to get started?
I guess the first point is more than anything else is the first disillusion that they've got to, you know, bear in mind is the fact that TV is not how we perceive things on investigations or how investigations should go. So they should bed themselves in first, knowing that investigations can be boring and they are long stretch as well, and just to be patient in that respect. It's not, you know, it's not all the glitter and glam what you see on TV. There's a lot of, you know, sitting in dark rooms, you know, just talking to yourself half the time, just waiting for something to happen. So you've got to understand that at the same time as well. Go stick to your own path. Before you actually start in the field, come to terms in your head what you exactly want in the field and stick to that rather than chopping and changing. Whether you want to have your own YouTube show or anything like that, stick to that. If you want to deem yourself as a paranormal researcher, you know, stick to that and go out and do actual research on actual paranormal researchers in history that have done similar things and what they researched as well. You know, experimentations. You know, create data logs on you know, light, on sound, and stuff like that. You know, be creative when you're out there as well. You know. You don't have to do everything that you see on TV. Create your own bubble, I guess, in hindsight.
Yeah.
And the last thing as well, stay away from the drama, because there's a lot of it out there, believe me.
Oh, my God. More than we care to admit. You know, that's actually some of that advice you had given me in Canada, and it's like one of those things, once I was removed from the situation, I was so focused on making everything work that I couldn't see the forest for the trees.
Yep.
And it's like once I got removed from that situation, it's like when I told, you know, I'm still doing my research with Michael. I'll be glad to help you out anytime you need it. You know, and if I get anything major, of course, you are automatically invited to it. But other than that,
no, definitely.
It's just me. It's the stuff that I'm experimenting with, going out and just kind of, you know, I'm just have spirit box will travel. You know what I mean? It's just I'm going out
totally.
And doing my own thing with it.
Yeah.
So
Sherry,
Steve,
did you
come home with any attachments or anything like that?
Yes. You know what? Good question. I've always been highly skeptical about spirit attachments and so forth. And I, for years and years and years, thought to a degree that it was a lot of people just, you know, expanding their minds a bit too much on investigations. So, as soon as they got home, they're still on edge. And they naturally thought that whatever was there on the investigation has come home for them. I was investigating for about 4 or 5 years, a Aboriginal school in BC, it's got quite a history to it. Obviously, you obviously know about the Aboriginal, you know, history of you know, North America and stuff like that, and the residential schools, what happened there. Was investigating one part of the building one particular night, and there was they used this particular part of the building as a film set, and they converted one of the old classrooms into a jail cell. So we're in there and we're messing around and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, I've opened the cell door to open back up, and I've walked out, and all of a sudden I felt this breeze, and I'm like, okay, that's weird, and I'm looking around, and it was like a cold breeze, and it just felt like someone turning the HVAC on very quickly. And I'm looking around, I couldn't see any ductwork or anything like that. I thought, that's weird. Anyway, I went home, and everything was fine. Next day I got up, I had the paranormal hangover for about 3 or 4 days. I just thought I was going to get a cold or something like that. And then my wife went to Fort Mac, which is in Alberta, next province along, to see her brother. And she went, and she drove off. She drove to the airport, and I was sitting in the front room. And I put my head back on the couch, and I shut my eyes. And you're in that state where you're half asleep and half awake. I was visualizing myself walking into the kitchen, going to the drawer and pulling a knife out and sticking a knife in myself. So I woke up and I was in like so much tears and stuff like that. And I was like, what the hell's going on with me? And I got up and I walked into the bathroom, into my ensuite, into my bedroom. And I looked up in the mirror and I could see a boy's face rather than my own face. And I closed my eyes and it's gone, and it was my face again. So I'm sticking my head under the water and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what do I do? And stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, I need to get rid of whatever's there. So I sat down in the front room, and I basically, I did some spiritual prayers and stuff like that. And I felt whoever was there, that boy, go away. But I, honestly, Sherry, I'm the most skeptical person when it comes to that whatsoever, but until that happened to me, it's like I know what I saw and I know what I felt, and it's something that I tell people to protect themselves and stuff like that. You know, there's various methods of people protecting themselves and stuff like that, but it can happen to anyone at any given time, and there's no protection whatsoever you can do to stop that happening to you. Like, you know, I've had followers follow people home from restaurants and stuff like that. I've had investigators on investigations that have had, you know, they stand outside and do like a spiritual prayer and they cover themselves in white light, that kind of thing, and they still carry things home with them. It's, you know, it'd be, I guess the way I look at it being is like you covering yourself in bubble wrap and someone's still following you home, even though you've got bubble wrap all the way around you. It's still not going to stop anything, is it? Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Totally. Totally. Yeah. That's all you can do is just try and keep a bubble, you know, around you and minimize it as much as possible.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is that a lot of people create that, you know, they believe in the white, but they say that they're going to, you know, do a prayer or St. Michael's and stuff like that, but a lot of the people that actually do that don't actually believe it. That's why something like that may happen to them. They don't actually believe in what they're saying is going to protect them. That makes sense. They're not in that, you know, they're not in that spiritual mind or that religious mind. Like if you're doing a, you know, if you're doing a, like something for St. Michael's on you, you're doing a protection charm on yourself and St. Michael's. You have to be religious in order to do that because you have to believe in that whole element. You're not going to just go ahead and say it just to hopefully protect yourself. You've got to believe in that realm more than anything else.
Yeah.
It's all about belief.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And she said it right on the money. If you believe in that realm, you know, whether the angels or God or whoever whatever you call upon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. So what do you think, Joel?
Well, we are at 11:04, letting it out that I'm back in East Coast time. So I do want to thank Pete for coming on and sharing some of his knowledge with again. Not again here. This is Paranormal Horizons debut. Of course,
yep.
You know, anytime, either show, just let me know. We'll be glad to have you back on and maybe bring your co-author with that, Jason.
Jason Hewitt.
Hewitt, thank you. I'm sorry, I forgot his name. Sorry, Jason, if you're listening. Did not mean that in any way. Just brain fart in the moment.
Yeah, I know. You're tired, mate. I know. I get it.
Just want to go a quick rundown of where they can find your different, you know, I know the book is on Amazon. It's doing great on there. I still got to get on there and leave you a review. I think Michael may already have, but I'm not positive yet on that.
Is he? Okay.
Just give an idea where they can find find you, find your book, find the YouTube series, all of that.
Okay, so our nonprofit society is the Canadian Paranormal Foundation, and you can get us on Facebook on that, and that's a very much an interactive Facebook page. Obviously, there's not much going on because of COVID, but we, you know, we do live feeds on the investigation, interactive chats, and that kind of thing on there as well. So that's on Facebook. We have a we have that on Instagram as well. We have the We Wanna Believe Facebook page, and that on Instagram as well. We have on YouTube the We Wanna Believe show, which is under Joe Blow Publishing, which is J-O-B-L-O. That they're the producers of the show. And my book, I Wanna Believe, which is slightly different to the show we have, I Wanna Believe, One Man's Journey into the Paranormal, that is on Amazon at, I think it's $14 US, is it? Something like that?
Yeah, $13.99
US. Yeah, and it's about $18 in Canada as well. So go and buy it.
Yeah, it is definitely worth that. And there is also, it does have the Kindle option as well for those people who don't like the actual physical books. I'm just the opposite. I have a Kindle, but I'm not big on e-books. I love the physical feel of it. But it's definitely a bargain at that price. And
good.
I highly, highly, highly recommend it. Like I said on the night, when you were on the Night Stalker, there are not a lot of people that I would recommend a book by or say, you know, if you were to come on and tell me the sky was green, I'd have to go outside and look, because I automatically would think, well, crap, something's going on. The sky's green. Because I know you're a no-nonsense, no-BS kind of person. What you see is what you get, and what's in that book is one of the best examples of true ghost stories, along with kind of the history of a paranormal researcher and how he got, you know, you got started, how your techniques developed and things like that. It's a little bit of a personal journal, a how-to guide, and entertainment from getting to hear ghost stories. So highly, highly recommend it.
That's a better summary, Joel. I'm impressed with that one. That was better than the first one.
Hey, I have my moment. Them two brain cells
bounce around.
Once they get, they're good.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you very much, guys. And thanks for having us on the show. It's great.
You're very welcome.
Well,
and I want to let everybody know, thank you for supporting Jason and I and Joel and Joe Panohu on Paranormal Horizons. And thank you for Pete. Thank you for contributing on our page. I scroll through that, and it's really refreshing to see you contributing on the Facebook page. So thank you.
Oh, no worries. I've been a part of Paranormal Horizons for for years, even before I met Joel. And I actually laugh at quite a lot of the memes that you post on there. I think they're hilarious. And they actually make my day a lot of the times. And that they've actually inspired me to post dad jokes all the time. So I'm very much excited to start contributing on your page. I have a lot of, you know, I'm going to start putting a lot of ghost paranormal blogs on there, as well as dad jokes on there as well.
Yes, you're welcome too. Absolutely. But yeah, thank you everybody for you know, just being a support and listening to Paranormal Horizons. And anybody wants to get a hold of me, they can get a hold of me on my Facebook page, and it's Psychic Medium Sherry. It's C-H-E-R-I, and it's or you can get a hold of me at www.psychicmediumsherry, C-H-E-R-I www.weebly.com. So, like I said earlier, my basis of everything I do is in Chinese medicine. I'm a medical medium and a medical Qigong practitioner. So, you don't have to say anything. Your body will always tell me what condition it is when I look at yourself, along with souls on the other side or your history. Things you can't Google, that's for sure. But anyway, yeah, thank you so much, Pete, for joining us. And we'll see what happens next week. I think hopefully Jason will feel better. And sounds like he's coming down with a bug. And I hope he feels better. And we'll continue next week. And thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
Take care. Peace.